Storyworthy Media, the best in story-driven content.
Hey, it's Margo Black, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannah Spinney.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn and I'm here with
Hannah Spinney, and we're at the Belasco Theater from the musical Gypsy.
Where the hell is that?
Well, it's a fictional theater that used to exist many, many years ago. It was a burlesque theater. But the musical Gypsy is all about the ultimate stage mom.
I see.
And of so Gypsy Rose Lee.
I see. So we're giving our
audience
We're giving our audience a double whammy of not only are we not really here, but in fact, it's
We're not even in a place that actually exists. And if this is too much for people, if it blows their minds, hey, man.
You know, I get messages, I'd say one or two a month, of people talking to me about, you know, I know you guys were in Wisconsin last week, or I heard you were in Florida, because they believe it. How can that be still happening after 5 years?
It's my pure strength.
It's your delivery? It's
my delivery, my belief. It, you know, as George Costanza once said on Seinfeld, remember, it's not a lie if you believe it.
Okay, you guys, so the reason why we're coming from the Gypsy Theater or whatever the hell Hannes is talking about.
The Belasco.
Because our storyteller tonight, Margo Black, she's a comedian and a writer and a PR guru, and she is bringing forth the topic stage mom.
Stage mom.
And I know she has a child because he's my daughter's age and they're friends.
Exactly.
So this story must be about her with her child doing something
right. And even though it takes place in Hollywood, it's stage mom. They're all stage moms, whether there's a stage involved or a camera or recording.
Have you ever seen that show, Dance Moms?
I've been forced to watch that on my lunch, and it is fucking horrifying.
It's truly unbelievable.
It's like the kind of thing where you're like, maybe America should just collapse in and on itself.
Yeah.
If this is what we're producing. This is the worst behavior I've ever seen in my life, and it's only girls / women who watch it. But it makes women look horrible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the stereotypes that misogynist men would have about women are bitchy and they're cunty and they're mean to each other and they're just concerned about, you know, money and it's like every horrible stereotype of women in one show. There's not one redeeming quality to anyone on it. And there's
now,
no man anywhere in sight.
This, of course, is the way the producers have set it up, though, everything.
Absolutely.
Or do you think it really, I mean, it is this way to an extent.
It is that way to an extent. You couldn't get a normal human being to act like this.
Yeah.
They have to want to be on TV so bad
that
they're willing to act like a horrible human being.
Right. It's
interesting. Which just makes them a horrible human being, so it's self-fulfilling prophecy.
It's interesting out here in Los Angeles. I've done a lot of commercials, and I'm always playing like casual mom, pretty but average, because I'm very average. And so, but I'm always the mom. So when I became a mom, I thought, well, shit, man.
Now the jobs are going to come flying.
I'm going to be working like crazy because I'm a mom. It shows. And I would take my daughter on auditions with me, and we did book one spot together. Now, she was a baby. She's like 7
literally
months old,
a baby.
10 months old, 12 months old. So she doesn't even know what's going on. So I can't really be a stage mom in that it's a baby. I'm dealing with a baby. But we did get cast in this spot for the Discovery Channel. It was just a commercial, like a promo for them. And it was basically mom, dad, baby. The baby walks from the mom to the dad, toddling, and falls into the father's arms. That's the whole spot.
Right.
It's nothing. And the day before we're supposed to shoot, I get a call from like production coordinator, somebody, I don't know who, casting, I don't know.
And they, it's just a random person.
Who fucking knows? And they say, hey, Christine, we have a problem. The husband that we cast for you can't do the spot anymore.
Yeah.
Do you have a husband? And I'm looking down the other end of the desk. My husband and I had a desk that we shared, and we would, you know, chairs that were beside one another. And I looked down at him and I'm like, yes, in fact, I do have a husband. And they said, well, maybe you could send his picture over. And, you know, does he have a beard? Yes, he does. Is he willing to shave? Okay, hold on. Let me ask him. You know, and I'm holding the phone. Matt, check this out. They're asking if you'll be in the commercial, me, you, in Alabama. So all of us are going to make money. all of us are going to get paid. This is fantastic. Will you shave? Of course you're going to shave, right? And he goes, well, I don't know if I really want to do it. You know, and I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? I go on 50 auditions to get one job.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, who's working on it? He wants to know who's on the set.
Right. Now, what I need to point out to the, first of all, normal people are like, well, of course he doesn't want to shave. Everybody in Hollywood is like, of course you shave. You shave your head, whatever. But he's not an actor.
No, he's not
he
an actor.
He did comedy, but he's a crew guy. He's a director.
And that's why
so he doesn't have the mentality right. Of when they say to you in an audition, I've had this, you know, will you shave? You say yes. You just say yes.
You just do.
Can you ride a horse? Yes.
Yes. Do you rollerblade?
Will you shave a horse? Yes. So it's like, you know, he doesn't have that mentality.
Right. So he wants to know who's working on set because he thinks if they see him, you know, doing a commercial, they're going to make fun of him.
Yeah.
So I'm like, Matt, yeah, we're doing it.
Yeah.
And we did do the commercial and it is adorable.
And he did not shave, if
and
I recall.
He did not. No, he did shit. Wait. I think he did shave.
I saw a still from this. I'm pretty sure
he right. He didn't shave.
Yeah.
The point is, we all got paid, and now my daughter has a Coogan account, and I think she's in SAG. I don't know.
Yeah, it's funny because I'll see like you know, various actor friends what on Facebook, whatever the category of friend that is, and I'll be like, this woman is like, I'm going in with my daughter. I'm so excited. And it's like, we made callbacks. And then she'll be like, my daughter got picked. I didn't.
That's
with
right.
a different mom. So they'll have people, you know, and you think to yourself, yeah, you have this actor couple with their actor baby. They're like, we're all going to work together. No, some other actor is going to be the dad. Someone's going to be the mom and somebody's going to be the baby. And none of you people are going to be related.
Yeah. Well, my daughter put a quick end to that. At
yeah,
about
she did not
age
care for
two,
it.
She said, no, thank you anymore and would not go to any more auditions. Now she's 8 years old. She's sort of, and actually she's 9 years old now. And she's sort of coming around because she's starting to see some of her friends on TV in commercials.
And you just, she was just in her production of The Sound of Music.
Right. So now she's been on stage and then she sees me in a couple of commercials. And so now she's starting to think like, well, maybe. But I'm like, you know what, Alabama, you don't want to do this. You don't want to do it. It's just miserable.
It's one of those things that you should. Yeah. Yeah. Your kid should be a doctor. Your kid should be a lawyer. Your kid should be.
Well, no, anything I don't care if she wants to be an actor, but not when she's a child. I mean, once she's 18 or 21 or whatever the hell, you know, then fair enough. But not when she doesn't know any better. You know, like now, when she would go on auditions.
You're 50, you don't know any better.
She thought that was a job. Like, she didn't understand the callback and the job. She thought the job was the audition, which essentially it is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, she didn't. Yeah, she did. Yeah, rejection is hard enough. It's when you're a child and they're like, you're not quite as cute as the one staying next to you.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
And why are they so nice to me, Mommy? They're so nice to me, but they don't want me. You know?
Yeah, and you burst into tears. That's how I feel every day.
That's my life.
Why are they always good? You know, how is a kid going to understand the concept of the worst thing you want to hear at the end of you do an audition and the guy looks at you and he goes, great job.
Yeah.
Great job. That means fuck you.
Yeah.
That is Hollywood for fuck you, get out.
Yeah, kind of. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, we've got a great storyteller here tonight, Margot Black. You know, she has a brand new book out, Hannes, called Where's My Award?
What? And she's holding
Where's
it up right now.
Where's My Award? It's a really sassy cover with a red carpet on it because Margot does do PR for celebrities, and she's a working mom in Hollywood.
And she can cause people to get awards.
And
she has the power.
She's
I want
trying
an award.
To do it all. She is doing it all.
Much like Liz Lemon. She's going to do it all.
That's
she's gonna
right.
have it all.
But before Margot tells her story, I did want to remind you guys that if you'd like to support the Storyworthy podcast, we would so appreciate it.
We would. You can tell your friends about us.
That helps.
On Instagram and on Facebook. Just get them to follow us. Numbers. Tell them we're on iTunes. They can download it for free.
We have, you know, we have a YouTube page. Did you know that?
Yes, I did.
No,
yes,
you didn't. You didn't know that. Did you?
I assumed we had
There's
a YouTube
There's a few
page.
Things up there. There's not enough.
Do we have a Friendster page?
We're going to beef that up. Friendster, we're working on that.
We need a MySpace. I'll be in charge of the MySpace page.
And, of course, you guys head on over to storyworthypodcast.com for all upcoming events, et cetera,
and
et cetera.
Never let us forget, they can buy your book,
They can buy my book, Pit to LAX, My Storyworthy Life.
I like how you hold it up like there's cameras here.
All right, you guys, wherever you are, stick around because Margot Black is on her way. Storyworthy, we have actress and writer Clementine Ford.
And I'll be talking about real bodies and real issues.
That's next time on Storyworthy.
Hello, people. It's Phil Rosenthal, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
And we're back. We've left the Blasco Theater, and we're in Sardi's right now. Truman Capote is at the next table. He's still alive, you know.
Man, you are just off the rocker with this one.
I am all over. I want to get letters about, when were you at Sardi's? I was at Sardi's.
Yeah. And didn't that guy die? Who was it? Who did you just mention?
Truman Capote.
Didn't Truman Capote die?
Not only did he die, but one of the actors the actor that won an Oscar playing him also died.
Yeah, Philip Seymour Hoffman, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
so the
too
other
bad.
Guy who played him in a movie that no one saw is still alive.
Talk about an eccentric character, right?
Yeah, he would have been a good guy to know, but it's like, you know, and it's sad. I remember people going, I can't believe Philip Seymour Hoffman died of a drug overdose. And I didn't write it down on Facebook because it sounds mean, but it's like, I can completely believe that he died of a drug overdose. You know, if he died climbing a mountain, that would have surprised me.
Yeah.
But a heroin overdose, no, or whatever it was. It's like, that does not, people are like, Charlie Sheen, do you believe he has HIV? Yeah. Yeah, I believe that.
Scott Weiland passed away, you know, and the first thing I sent it to my, you know, my girlfriend Carolyn, and she wrote back, I thought he did, you know, I thought he died of a drug overdose years ago. No.
Right. What I like is that I didn't, you know, I had no idea who he was. And people were like, oh my God, I can't believe Scott Weiland died. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I have no idea who this guy is.
Because you're 120, Hannes.
I am 120.
That's the problem.
You know why? No heroin, no mountains. I
Ladies
just sit
gentlemen.
Quietly and I watch Match Game 78.
With Jean Rayburn.
Jean Rayburn.
All right, you guys, she's here right now, Margot Black. She's a comedian, a PR visionary, a trophy wife.
Yeah.
A mom and now an author. Margot Black is the driving force behind Hollywood-based boutique agency Black Ink PR.
Black
don't
Ink.
You like that? I like that title, don't you?
Black Ink.
Black Ink PR and Marketing. And she's also the working mom creator of the acclaimed comedy memoir, Where's My Award? How to Get Baby Barf Out of a Red Carpet and Other Tales from a Working Mom in Hollywood. You can find her at margotblack.com. You can also find her over at Twitter at Black Ink PR. All right, folks, wherever you are, put your hands together for Margot Black.
Shortly after my kid turned 4, Hollywood came knocking on our door. And when I say knocking, I mean Hollywood literally used the actual knocker on my actual front door. It was in the shape of a drop-dead gorgeous Hollywood actress named Golden Brooks, who just happened to live in my neighborhood. Her daughter Dakota was a year or two younger than my son Jet, and we'd see each other now and then pushing strollers and enjoying our sunshine. I started a little group on my neighborhood of moms called Sippy Cup Socials, where neighborhood moms and I would meet after preschool, fill our sippy cups with liquor, and take our kids to the park. Don't arrest me, please. We did it in restaurants, too, and fill our sippy cup with margaritas. I know, super cool, and honestly, very necessary for our sanity. Frankly, I needed a double sippy cup the first time I met Golden. She was wearing cutoff shorts, t-shirts, and flip-flops, and I tell you, without a scrap of makeup, she was freaking gorgeous. I'd said to my star-struck self, oh my God, this is the most beautiful woman I've ever seen on planet Earth. And I mean Hollywood beautiful, the kind of beauty that comes from all over the planet to be the most beautiful woman in Hollywood. If you ever wanted to know if you're swimming in the shallow end of the DNA pool, this is the type of moment you know you are. Not just pretty girl in class, pretty girl on planet beautiful. All right. And it's brutal. You suck it up. You know, I am pretty girl's best friend for the rest of my life. Nevertheless, I'm the bigger person and accept her for who she is, and we become mom friends. But Golden is a woman who not only is a total and utter knockout, she's also cracked Hollywood. She's a top working actress. She was on Girlfriends for 7 years before 2 seasons of Heart of Dixie and many other projects. She is not a newbie. She is not a waitress. She's a big deal, and she's really earning a good living in Hollywood doing a tough job. Hats off to her. So one day, I'm working at home, and the beautiful Golden, this time without her daughter, Dakota, knocks unannounced on my front door. I'm working at my desk and I can see her through the front window. So irritatingly enough, I have no time for liposuction or Botox or makeup before letting her in. She sees my son, Jet, who's playing with his toy cars and bends down to say hi. And I think my son just bats his eyelashes at her. And I think for a moment, oh my God, is my 4-year-old flirting with a Hollywood star? I'm kind of impressed by him. So I can't imagine why she's there. And then Golden tells me she's been in a series of auditions for a pilot she's producing and acting in. And she says, you know, there's a little boy who's one of the leads. And every time I see a little boy come in the room and audition for the role, I think to myself, oh, I hope this little boy will be like Jet. I haven't found that little boy. So what do you think? Could it be Jet? For the first time in my life, I'm speechless. And before I can utter another word, she says, or a sound even, she says, it pays. Now, Miss Brooks has literally presented my precious cargo with a seemingly golden ticket to stardom. This is the kind of break people hope for all their lives. Just to put it in perspective, look at it this way. I've worked my entire life in Hollywood and nobody has ever, ever knocked on my door and offered me a role for anything. Nobody's ever offered me a job. But in fairness, I'm not as good looking as my kid. So I say, yes, 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 yes. I am grinning in a way that only Lindsay Lohan's parents could possibly understand. The lead, oh my God, the starlet just offered my son a lead. I tell my husband, Rob, and he's also delighted. So she explains to us on the day of the shoot, Jet's task will be really simple. All I have to do is like wake up, pretend he's from a night, having a nightmare, and scream, mommy, mommy, mommy. Which is perfect because my son's at the age he does it anyway. He's like jumping out of doors to scare me. Perfect, perfect, perfect. I am counting dollars in my brain. I'm so excited. So the shoot, I'm thinking walk in the park. So I tell my husband and I'm literally, as I'm telling my husband, I can hear the sound of college funds and I'm totally relieved. Oh my God, we're going to pay for college. Our spawn is special. The lead, the lead. My son can go to Harvard and I can go to Aruba. I am so excited. I pop a bottle of champagne in my brain. And then suddenly it occurs to me, I've left out one detail. Does our son, Jet, want to do it? And so I ask him. And quite clearly, he says no. Excuse me? He says, no filming. And he does not miss a beat. No, no, don't want to. And I think, okay, please, because mommy wants an Hermes jacket. And he says, he gives me a kiss, comes up and says, no filming. No, thank you. And so being the good mom that I am, I say, okay, let's be curious, like Curious George. And we pack our body weight and snacks and go off to film. And I tell Golden, yes, sure, we'll do it. And so here's the thing about my kid. It's not the first time in his life he's dipping his teeny tiny little perfect toes into the shark infested waters of Hollywood. He's actually had other jobs. And when he was a little baby, somebody came up and said, can he do something? We did it. It didn't work out well. And, you know, it's a lot of effort to get a kid into a car, be pretty, not barf, be pristine. You know, hats off to the Olsen twins, mom. And just to let you know, the Olsen kids are twins. And as a little Hollywood side note, twins are far more valuable than single kids because they can be replaced. So on the day of Jet's shoot, we go and we go into Golden's home and they're shooting a bedroom scene. First of all, it is gorgeous. You could tell a decorator did this. Colors you can't even name the palette. There's crystals everywhere. It is like in Style magazine. And then there's cameras everywhere. There's probably like a crew of 15. We meet people, we meet directors, you know, tons of like craft services, everything. You can basically smell the money burning. So I say to my kid, oh, look, honey, licorice. And he takes a piece of licorice, looks around and goes, no filming, mama, no filming. And I'm like, nah, he'll warm up to the idea. Have a little more candy. And so we go into the stage and we look around. Let's just be curious. Let's look. And so, you know, this is from a kid, first of all, who, remember, likes to frighten his mom. That's his only job on his set. And then we get in. I'm like, let's just give it a try, Jet. And he gets in and they go action. And he just looks at the camera. The kid who will ham it up for your iPhone, ham it up for a camera, ham, ham, ham. Now, nada, nothing, zippo. 15 people are staring at him. We reset 3 or 4 more times. Resetting takes time. Resetting takes money. Did I mention the money? Literally, you might as well like have a guy at this point. We've been in the room for like an hour or two shoving money into like the toilet bowl. And I'm starting to think, okay, this is not going so well. Not going so well. My kid is usually a great player. Really loves to play along. And I tell him he's got to stay in the bed. He doesn't look really happy. I whisper some cool mom bribes to him in his ear, like Happy Meal, Curious George toys, candy. You know, we try a couple more times and I start calculating their production budget in my head. I'm like, that camera's 10 grand. That dolly's 15 grand. I'm like adding it up in my head. And my kid is just sitting there. He eats another red vine. He asks for some juice. 15 people watch my kid under big light drink juice. They call cut again. Finally, the director says, look, why don't we swap out the moms? You know, there's another mom. And why don't you do it? So suddenly, my spawn is so special. Just his good looks, he has resurrected my acting career. Now, the other mom, of course, who thought this was her big break, is visibly pissed. Yeah. A little sorry she paid for those Meisner classes now. But, you know, call us bad parents. We just beg him one more time. Just this once. please do it. And I promise we'll never have to film again. No dice. We start offering extra sessions of Angry Birds at home. Yeah, I'm in show business for less than 2 hours and I'm sucking up to my own kid. Still, no dice. It's his golden ticket into stardom. And I swear to my son, all that glitters is not gold. And he clearly has no interest. Okay, but at this point, the director, the other camera operators, I can see him, you know, just cursing in his head. It's not like I'm psychic, but I can hear the soundtrack and it's all profane. So then I look up. There's no backup kid. There's nothing. I'm mortified. The director just wants to kill me. And my husband starts bribing my kid again. Now he steps in. So my kid's, let's say, 3 hours in showbiz, two bribing parents and 15 people sucking up to him. Great. My stress levels are through the roof. Then I start thinking, oh my God, these lights are so hot. I honestly, in this moment, completely understand how half of Hollywood is on crack. The pressure is intense. I want to have a drug addiction right now. And then I start thinking, oh my God, are there child labor laws on break-in? What am I doing? After what seems like forever, we throw in the towel and leave the set with our heads hung low. Feeling like a failure as a stage mom. Beautiful, golden, totally professional, serene, gorgeous. She's like, not a problem. I mean, so professional. We get home. First thing I do is inhale 6 giant-sized Tootsie Rolls and a large glass of white wine. I know, totally mature. And I'm not one to, like, really, you know, kind of anxious eat. But I don't know what happened. My traumatic stint as a showbiz mom tipped me over the edge. It was less of a case, whatever happened to baby Jane, and more of a case, like, how the hell did I get through that bottle so quickly? So we get into bed, and suddenly my son is his jubilant self again. He's happy. He's joyful. You know, we get into the tub, and, like, I'm washing him up, and like a couple hours later, I say, honey, why did you not want to do that so much? And he looks at me with so much love and his beautiful batting lashes, and he says, but mommy, I don't want to die and live in the TV. I want to stay here and live with you and daddy. And I think in a minute, oh my God, I'm the biggest asshole on planet Earth. So at this time, we weren't watching a lot of TV. It was like a steady diet of, you know, Kung Fu Panda, How to Train Your Dragon, Curious George. And my kid thinks that we were trying to sell him to live in the TV. That's how it works. Now, I don't have in this moment all the wherewithal. I want to cry. I want to hug him. I feel like the biggest failure in the world. I can't exactly explain all of creationism to him, from like Pixar to, you know, how it all works. We take our phones, we show him in the TV. He's giggling, then he's giggling in my phone, then he's screaming in my phone. Okay, I can see my Bentley going, I can see Aruba going, I see my Hermes jacket going. And I think, oh my goodness, he just had no idea. And I tell him, I'm never selling you to the TV. I'm never even letting you go. Even when you're married, we're going to follow you around forever. But we were the biggest asshole stage parents ever. And the good news is, my son will never be in a true Hollywood story. Well, except for this one.
I don't want to live in the TV. See, the funny thing is, I want to live in the TV. Yeah. I wanted to a long time ago.
You understood it. You understood.
If I could have moved into a TV, yeah.
But this is a tiny baby. This is a four-year-old, and it's not like his mom or dad works in the industry. You know, like my daughter, Alabama, her father is a director, and he's, you know, he's on sets all the time, and he walks around with, you know, duct tape. And
right, my son had never...
a light meter.
Yeah. Right. He'd never really seen it by that point. Right. I mean, all we were doing were watching movies.
He didn't understand the production end of it.
No, and I thought, oh my God, for the rest of my life now, I will always... From that moment, I realized, okay, you always have to put yourself in your kid's shoes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's what I didn't do because I was into this elixir of a cocktail, Aruba Bentley College Fund, Aruba Bentley College Fund. I mean, it is like a mesmerizing mantra, a magical pot of gold.
Well, everybody, every single parent in LA whose kid goes out for an audition, every single parent I've ever met, they all say the same thing. Well, it's just like for a college fund, if they could just pull a couple of dollars together now, but we're not like stage moms. I mean, we're not like stage parents. We're not going to push them. Just so we can make just a little bit of money. That's all.
A little bit of college. And then you're thinking, oh my God, I swear to God, yes. And in that one afternoon, I swear, we went through every emotion from what mansion would we have in Bel Air to like how much money do we need to spend on couples therapy. But you can see it. You can see what a big slope it is.
So you thought he'd really be an actor from then on out?
No, but you know, somebody walks in your door and knocks on your door and says, you know, every time I see a kid, I hoped it was your kid.
See, I think the guy who's, you know, the other people are like, why? Yeah, I know she's producing and starring in it, but it's like, why did she just come up with a kid with no acting experience who's not a twin? Because like the kids on the twins on Everybody Loves Raymond are actually triplets.
Oh, no kidding.
Because twins
nice
are not. You
spare.
Gotta have a. You gotta have one
spare
who just took a nap.
You need a spare. That is the Hollywood inside secret. Everybody's a twin. But yeah, no, like we were personal friends. You know, we saw each other around the
block.
No,
I understand that, but it wasn't like her. Her, it was a professional thing, so it was like she was really taking a risk there.
She was, and you know, she knew my kid, and I'm sure if it had gone backwards and my kid didn't think I was selling him to live in the television for a moment, he probably would have been a lot better
so
prepared.
Does Golden Brooks still live down the street?
No, she moved out of the neighborhood, and
where'd she move to? Bel Air?
I don't know, but
Palisades.
I really don't know where, but she's just such a beautiful, beautiful. I mean, when you're in the presence of that Hollywood beauty, you just know, man.
Hannes can talk about that.
Yeah, the time I was a featured extra in The Aviator, and I was with the guy playing Louis B. Mayer, who Cate Blanchett comes up. She's Katharine Hepburn, and she comes up and talks to him. So she comes up directly towards me, and is like a foot away, and you're like, it's like you can't even speak when
she's
people
like
are that good looking.
Yeah,
when people are that
like
perfect
Charlize
looking.
Like Charlize Theron is like that, too.
It is mesmerizing.
Oh, yeah.
Beauty.
No, I've heard that. And it's not even about sex. I've heard that if I ever met George Clooney, I'd be like, I can't even talk. You're so because it, I think it has to do with they say that people are attractive because their faces are symmetrical. This is a theory that like the reason that we consider a face to be handsome or gorgeous it's because both of its sides are perfectly symmetrical.
That's like
which
true
is,
Greek beauty or a Greek goddess.
Which is not the way most human beings are. So like somebody like that, it doesn't, you just look at him and you're like, I can't even believe you exist.
Exactly. And the funny thing is, you know, we all have to swallow like these little fibs that they tell other little children that might not be so gorgeous. Like, oh, it's the inside. Yes. Oh, it's personality. Oh, you're so special. But you're in the moment in front of it and you're like, oh.
However, I don't know. However, I've met some people that are so beautiful like that, and then they start talking, and it's just vacuous. You know,
yeah, but that wasn't this. But again, you know, for all that people, you know how hard Hollywood is, and it's like beating your head. So for somebody to walk up and knock on your door and say, "Would you like this part?" That like never happens.
Do you know any like stage moms?
And
like
now
that?
We know why.
Well, actually, you know, I mean, my stepsister has a son that's in Hollywood, but she's got a lot more time to take him around, and it's another job. It's a job for the mom. Yeah. It's a full job for the mom.
But do you think that she is like a stage mom? Like, does she push it? Does she really?
I don't think so. I mean, I think he's.
I'll see these moms at like an audition, like a commercial audition, and they have three kids with them. Only one of the kids is going to the audition.
Yeah, right.
The other two had to come along. So
that's
now
hard.
She has to set up like a little triage kindergarten area.
Right.
With stuff to do for all these kids who are just bored out of their minds.
Yeah. I would have to drag Alabama around on auditions. Even if she wasn't auditioning, I was auditioning. And, you know, you're with a stroller and you got like there's a backpack
it's
and a
hard.
Diaper bag. And then you get to an elevator and you can't get the stroller in or it's out of service. And now you're climbing stairs.
Oh, it's
and
awful.
You're trying to look good all this
while. That's the thing. And you're so stressed.
And you're trying to, maintain this dignity of like, or this air of like, oh, this is no big deal. I do it all the time.
Absolutely.
It's
easy
a big
peasy.
Fucking deal.
It's a big deal. It's exhausting.
I remember
really
being
hard.
On the 10 freeway and my daughter vomiting in the car seat. You know, I'm on my way to an audition.
Totally natural.
She's vomiting in the car seat behind me and I'm on the 10. You can't do anything.
Right. Right.
Nightmare.
And also the thing is that startled me the most is you see yourself sucking up to your kid so fast.
Yeah.
Because
you're embarrassed. Right?
No, it wasn't even that. I was just trying to get the job done. Like, I really realized, okay, this is a lot of money.
This is
a lot of work.
Actors are so screwed up because it's like just the people are sucking up to them because they need to get done.
You got
to
get done.
And they think, they must really like me. I don't care about you at all. You're a giant prop.
Exactly.
Just
say
the
words. Through this, right.
Yeah, kids and animals are the hardest to work with, they say. Hmm. So listen, you have this new book out, Where's My Award? And this is one of the stories in the book?
Yeah, and it's just really a big love letter to working moms. That's what the book is. It's a love letter to working moms. And you know
it,
Christine, because it is hard to be a working mom.
It is.
When you are pushing that stroller upstairs and you're trying to get it all done and you're trying to juggle. I don't think moms get enough kudos and celebration for all the work they do. And I think that everything that we look at in the magazines and a lot of media, it's just so fake.
Yeah. Well, now let me ask you something, because the subtitle under the book is How to Get Baby Barf Out of the Red Carpet. Do you, is there an experience about barf in a red carpet in this book?
Oh, yes, there is.
Can we hear about that?
I'll come back at another time and I'll tell you the entire story.
Okay. Okay. Because did you take your, does your son, because this little boy on the cover actually looks like your son, Jet.
That's why we picked that picture.
That's adorable. Mm. Have you taken him to events like this?
Oh, yeah.
And so what does he do when you go to a... What are you doing at the events? Because you're a PR person.
Right. I've done all kinds of different things. He's pretty good. He's really good. He understands work. He understands when it's time to work and that I'm working. I think he's kind of... He's grown up.
But as a PR person, what do you do at a red carpet event? Because I don't think a lot of people understand how the red carpet even works. Like, for instance, the first time I actually was a part of a red carpet, like, I didn't understand that you get corralled before you walk that carpet. You're kind of corralled in an area, mm-hmm. kind of going one at a time so that the people taking your picture know who's coming.
Absolutely.
So and then how they does need that to work? Tell us about that.
Well, it depends on all different types of ways, but there's so many different parts, but let's just say you're doing a big debut and you want to show that there are people there. Each person has to be ID'd. The photographers need to know who's there. You need to know what their story angles are.
A film premiere.
The information. Well, I mean, I do all kinds of different premieres. So I do business premieres, entrepreneur premieres, restaurant premieres.
What's a business premiere?
So sometimes people are debuting a brand new business. There's a lot of details that go into it. You need to make sure your media is correct. Your photos are correct. People know where to go. That everything works when they go there. Stores work. Shopping carts work. The press is, ID'd ahead of time so that they have a heads up. It's not like you just have an event that day and call everybody and say, are you free to come down to my event? I mean, you're pre-calling
the press. So specifically the red carpet, how does that work?
Well, the red carpet, you first of all want to make sure you have good people on the carpet, right?
What does it mean, good people on the carpet?
People that the photographers can make money from. So they need to sell their photos. And then the magazines need to make sure they have something to work with. They need to be good dresses. They need to be looking up. They need to be people of interest. Look, you and I could walk down the red carpet, but nobody needs us.
Right.
But you and I walk down the red carpet like, you know, George Clooney dragging us on his leg. We're on the cover
of Us
magazine.
Can you make that happen, please? Is that possible? I mean, can you spin your magic?
Sure. You just give me George Clooney's cell phone
number
and I'll
him.
Get right on
I
it for
George
you, Christine.
I saw George Clooney. Excuse me. I saw George Clooney twice in 3 days.
Wow.
The first time at Dan Tana's restaurant, and we made a little eye contact. I'm not going to lie to you.
Uh-huh. Sure.
2-3 days later, I shit you not, I'm in Studio City. I'm in a sushi restaurant. I walk in. Who's sitting there in the booth? George Clooney. And I kid you not, he did one of these. Watch this. He went, huh. Like he raised his head up at me.
Huh. Yeah, like,
he recognized me, and I was just like,
again.
I have to go to the bathroom now and be alone. It might take me 2 to 3 minutes. That's it.
I would have gone up. See, in that moment, you got to go up and introduce yourself. Just say, hey, stranger in my universe. I mean, you know, I'm a stranger, but you're not a stranger.
I think that was his reaction to, like, he didn't know who you were, and he didn't even know why he recognized you, but it was, you were still in his brain, like, I've seen that person before.
Yeah.
So I'm going to nod.
He is beautiful, man. He's one of those people that just stops you in your tracks.
Yeah, that's what I've always
And Johnny Depp also stopped me in my tracks.
Oh, gorgeous, gorgeous.
Yeah. Gorgeous.
Paul Giamatti. He'll stop being in his tracks.
And the thing is, when you're asking me about the red carpet, I mean, that's why those people get paid so much, because very few people can command that full-on red carpet to cover of magazine celebrity that sells stuff.
And
that's,
it changes
that's what it comes down to.
All the time.
All the time.
So
all the
you
time.
Never know who's it, who's not it.
You just reminded me of a story. The red carpet, when I, years ago, I was going out with a girl for a very short period of time, happened to work at Universal. And it was the premiere of The Lost World, the second Jurassic Park movie.
Okay.
So we get to go to it. And we're walking down the red carpet. She had very short cropped bleach blonde hair and looked vaguely like Susan Powder. Do you remember Susan Powder?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I had this red beard because it wasn't gray then. And I vaguely looked like Timothy Busfield. And we're walking down and I can see in the photographer's eyes, they're like taking pictures and they have a look like, is that... Who we don't is that somebody?
Right.
They look like they might be somebody, but we're not sure. And then even if we think it's those two people, does anyone want a picture of that? You see all this calculation going on behind their eyes, and eventually they're like, we don't need to take a picture of you.
Right.
No.
So what happens then? The photographer takes the pictures and then they put them up on, like, it's called Getty Images. Is that what it's called?
It depends on how you're doing it and what you need for each client. It's different. But lots of times there's a deadline. So you need to get with a photographer. You need to sort through the images. They've got to go on a wire. You want your press release out. You want it to all hit the news. You want it fast. and you know, you still have an event to manage. So
there's
you're
so
trying to get it all out.
Complicated things going on, Margo. You really have to multitask.
You have to multitask, and the thing is, you're doing a lot of digital work, and you're making sure you get the right photos, and you want everybody ID'd properly. You want your client, let's say it's a film, you got to get the information in
and
there.
And now all the tags have to be on, and all the everybody's social media stuff has to be on and current.
And the odd and strange and brilliant part of it all is, like, let's say the carpet's not a big carpet. It's not a big thing, and you have to get the branding in the back. And you want everybody to look good. And the funny thing is, it's like such a small piece of like real estate in the universe, but it gets blasted out everywhere. And if it works and it's good and it's somebody that really can make, you know, any one of the People, Hollywood Reporter, anything like that, you're really able to move that message forward.
Yeah.
And it's a big deal. But, you know, everybody loves that red carpet, but I will tell you, it is made of blood, sweat, and tears.
Yeah. You really come at it from such a business angle, Margo. But a lot of people forget this is show business, is not show fun.
It is show business. And there's a lot of business right down to, you best have some red tape on the side of that so people don't trip on their heels. And the funny thing is, you know, women look gorgeous on the red carpet. Most of the time, they are standing there in killer pain because their shoes are like 4-inch shoes that they had to get from the car out to someplace. You know, it's not like they're wearing flip-flops because they're going to be photographed. And almost every celebrity I've ever seen on the red carpet is like, oh, my feet are killing
me.
And
then what happens when they come off the carpet?
I just want you to think of
the other end. What happens at the other end? They get off the carpet, what?
Then they usually go to whatever event they're going to.
Yeah, but are they like, Jesus, that was a bitch? Or do they take their shoes off?
No, they can't take their shoes off. No, you absolutely can't. You can't. You have to be at your event. So whatever you are, it's your job to look beautiful, to be there, to do it. They're very, very, very bright. I mean, most celebrities that are successful, they are exceptionally bright. They know the drill. You have to do the promo.
Yeah.
And the other thing is,
you have to look the part.
You have to look the part. You have to do it really well. And you've got to do it over and over and over again. Because when it is your time, it's your time repetitively for 3 days, like, you know, consistently from 9 o'clock in the morning to 9 o'clock.
What do you mean by that?
When you're doing a press junket.
I see.
And so sometimes for press junkets, you know, let's say for like international press, they come into a room. Let's say it's a Julia Roberts movie. She's sitting there. She has her talking points.
And she's in a hotel room like at the Four Seasons in Beverly Hills.
And they'll
one at a time.
No, not. Well, one at a time, maybe for the bigger press, they'll get an interview like 10 minutes at a time for major the television shows. But then for most of the other outlets, like say, let's say European media or some Australian media, they'll throw 7 journalists in a room at a table for 20 minutes. And those journalists have to get the story. Now, let's say we're all sitting at a table together, you, me, Hans, and 6 other people. I got to get some questions in. And I have to have a little bit of a different story than you do.
Well, don't they all have the same story? No.
No, you can't all. So like the journalist is trying to jockey for a little information to get a little something. So here, imagine yourself the celebrity. You have to tell a great tale about the job. Oh, this was like the best movie I ever worked on.
How was it to work with George Clooney? Right.
Oh, George Clooney is just so fabulous. And then everybody needs a little personal detail, a little work detail.
And you just keep repeating it.
Exactly. A little bit about what's going on in your life. Yes, I love being a mom. Yes, I love working. Yes, I love my Prada shoes. You know, blah, 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 blah. And but you're doing it over and over and over again, and you had best deliver.
Or you're out.
You're out.
Now they'll be like, yes, was George Clooney drunk on his press circuit? Because he'll yawn in the middle of one of these interviews where he's saying exactly the same thing over and over again.
Right.
And like you said about they're trying to get something, but it's reminding me, it's funny because sports does the same thing.
Yes.
But they'll be like live on ESPN. And it's like, they're like, what information are you going to get? You're not interviewing Castro one-on-one. Okay, he's dead. I'm 1,000 years old. But it's like, you're not going to get anything. You're not going to...
But you got to give everybody everything.
But the journalists themselves are like, what do they think they're going to make Julia Roberts say? She's not going to say something shocking or outrageous.
Yeah, she's not going to tell you something,
she's
right?
Not gonna,
why would
yeah,
she do she'd that?
She'd be like, you know, oh, how was it being a mom? I tell you, I had postpartum depression. For like, she's not saying that to you.
Well, here's the thing. It's all crafted. I mean, there's a publicist behind it. There are writers behind it. She's behind it.
What's the difference between a publicist and a PR person?
Same thing.
They're the same thing.
Same thing.
So PR person is a public relations manager. If you have a publicist, you have the same thing.
You have the same thing. PR, public relations. Sometimes people call my PR gal.
And did they bleed into social media or is that a separate category?
No, it bleeds right in. I mean, now, when I first started doing public relations, I'd have, you know, a pad, a pen, and a recorder. And I'd go to a newspaper. There were probably like five newspapers, and every man had a girl, and I was somebody's girl. And we'd all go to the newspaper, coordinator watches, and, you know, hand in the story.
None of these words mean anything to anyone ever under 20.
No, but then,
pencil,
you know, I
watch.
Came back like 10 years later, took a break, came to Hollywood, worked in Hollywood, went back. Then it's like all women and gay men. And, you know, did a little freelance PR, came back to Hollywood. Then it came back after I had a kid, went back to PR. And which is ironic that PR is easier than Hollywood as like the rejection factor. And so then it's tons of women. But now you're expected to do everything. Write it, produce it, shoot it, edit it, get it out, get it on the wire, get it on social media, get it everywhere. I mean, now it and also it's such intense amounts of writing now. Constant writing. I kind of miss the days. I feel like I missed a part of my career. Like, I should be in Mad Men, where it was like vodka, phone, and great dresses.
Yeah.
I could have done well then, but I still do well, but it's, you know, very writing.
Well, now it's like if you take the example of like a reporter, it used to be that the reporter would get in a car that somebody would drive with her, and there'd be a cameraman in the car, and they'd all drive to the location, and then the cameraman would shoot the girl, and there'd be like an assistant, and then they'd go back to the station, somebody would edit for her, you know, edit the piece, and then they'd put it up, and now the girl drives herself to the gig. She turns around her iPhone on a selfie stick.
Yeah.
Shoots herself.
Yep.
Gets back in the car, takes it back to the studio, edits the piece, and hands it in.
I would even say she goes into her car, plugs in her laptop to her, charges her laptop on her car cell phone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And edits it in the car and uses like a HubSpot from her cell phone and wires out her story as fast as she can to beat everybody else.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
It's really changed.
Yeah.
I remember also hearing about like the guys that do the traffic in the helicopter. So the guy is flying the helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
He has to talk with air traffic control in one ear.
Mm-hmm.
The other ear he's talking on the radio live and telling the traffic situation below him as he's flying the helicopter.
Right.
So it's like a one-man band. Everything is one person.
And if he's doing television, he's also got the camera. He controls the camera.
Yeah.
Right. And there are other people. But, you know, like my client won an award last year and it was a red carpet event. And so I pre-wrote the release. We went there, shot some pictures on the red carpet. And I edited the photos on my phone. I was like, excuse me, I'm just working and I'm sitting there doing it. Then I go into the theater. I have it all ready. And then I see if my client does win or doesn't win. My client does win. She goes up, accepts the award. I run out and I put my release together, put my photo together and shoot it on the wire.
Wow.
Done.
Amazing.
Here's my release. I social media it. Like before the award show was done, my announcement was up.
Wow. That's exciting.
Yeah,
everything moves so quickly. That's why we all need so much content, because it's just moving so quickly. We just chew through it.
Chew through it.
Like a crazy dog, like a rabid dog. Give me content, content, content. Give it to me.
And so if you want more content, you can, here's my shameless plug, read my book, Where's My Award?
It
How
really
to Get Baby
sweet.
Barf Out of a Red Carpet and Other Tales from a Working Mom in Hollywood. It's really just a love letter to every working mom
in
planet.
Really
hey, can
sweet.
You buy that on Amazon?
Thank you, Hannes. You're my hero.
You know what you can do? You can go to storyworthypodcast.com, click on our Amazon link.
Our banner ad, and then we get a little taste. Hey, listen, you want to play some Shotgun Storyworthy?
Oh, yes, I do.
That music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the Storyworthy Wheel of Truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
I got California. All right. So I came from New York and people always ask me, how'd you get to California? I didn't think about it a lot, but I was visiting my stepsister, Melissa, one day and we were rollerblading, my first time ever. And I was on the beach and I thought, oh my God, it's so beautiful. The sun, the heat, the sand. I should have worn sunscreen. I should have worn shorts. Who knew? I was on rollerblades because of my 12-year-old niece at the time. And then I didn't know how to stop. So I rolled into a newspaper caddy and I look down at the caddy and it says, Blizzard cripples East Coast. I feel the sun. I look at the ocean and I said, you know what? I'm staying.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm staying.
That's perfect.
And I just didn't come home. It wasn't really well thought out. It wasn't like a big, like, I'm looking for love in California. I just thought, that's it. Blizzard cripples New York. I'm done. I'm never digging my car out of the snow again. Hello, California. You're my new home.
There you go. God bless you. I agree. I think a lot of people find that California, you know, when it really clicks is when you're on the beach, either riding a bike or rollerblading.
Oh, it was January. It was January. I left that part out. It was January, and I thought, this is California.
But even if it was the middle of the summer and it's like they're having a heat wave back there, any time of the year in California is going to be better than any other
time
of year. Fuck the seasons. Fuck the fall. And
it doesn't even matter.
I know. People get over that real quick. They're like, aren't you miss the seasons?
No.
What are you talking about?
Right. Being kicked in the balls for 3 straight months from December to...
Months. It's like 5 months. And in Pittsburgh, it gets dark at like 3:30. So they're just like mole people, really.
Yeah, and people are always like, well, what about the seasons? And I'm like, I go to the mall and watch the clothes change in the windows. That's it. Yeah, I can tell they're different seasons. Yes. I'm good. It's fine.
Thank you so much for coming on the show, really.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
The book is fantastic, and it's just a really great inside look at how Hollywood is a business, man.
Oh, Hollywood's a business. It's show business, not show friend.
What do you think is more powerful, Wall Street or Hollywood?
That's a great question. You know,
because they deal directly with the money, and where does Hollywood get its money?
Wall Street.
So without Wall Street, there is no Hollywood.
I don't know. I might even disagree because there's
what?
Wall Street.
This is outrageous.
I got to tell you why. Because Hollywood is what everybody is seeing. Yes, all the money's in Wall Street, but Hollywood is taking, the amount of merchandise and intellectual property, everything that we sell is sold through television and a visual medium. And our world is so visual right now.
Yeah.
Everything you want is because you're seeing it. So,
all right, talk me into it.
Hollywood.
It's interesting. It's really interesting. All right, anyway, thank you so much for coming. We really appreciate
it. Thank you for having
me. I want to thank everybody here at the Improv, including our new sound guy, Ben Stewart. Thanks, Ben.
Yay, and of sound course, guy.
Thanks, Ben. You screwed up again.
And of course, on behalf of everybody at Sideshow Network, including Sean Merrick and Roddy Swearingen, and of course, on behalf of John Thomas Griffith, you know, he wrote the theme song, Follow Me.
He's so handsome.
He is
his
handsome.
His face is completely symmetrical. He has one eye across his whole head. That's how perfect.
And on behalf of you, Margo Black, again, thank you so much for coming to the Improv to record with us today.
My total delight. Thanks for having me.
And on behalf of you, Hannah Spinney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.